Sai Ram, and welcome to another wonderful session of afternoon satsang. The time in our studios is 12:31 p.m. and it's a wonderful afternoon, saturated with humidity in the environment and Swami's love in the atmosphere here in our studios. It's such a wonderful time to sit and talk about Swami and His glories, because this week is the first week of the fortnight when we will resume our discussion on Satyam Shivam Sundaram, Swami's life. Well, talking about Swami's life, there's nothing like a good time or a bad time or a nice time or a perfect time to talk about Swami and His life. Any time is the best time, because it is not the time that determines how interesting or how wonderful the narrative about Swami's life is going to be, but it is Swami's narrative that makes any time into a wonderful time. And yes, I am Arvind from Team Radio Sai, and as always, I am with Brother Prem from Team Radio Sai. Sai Ram Prem.
Sai Ram Arvind, and Sai Ram to all listeners of Radio Sai. Yes, indeed, it's, you know, the weather and the place and time does not matter when you have to talk about Swami, but it does add a romantic flavor to it, you know.
Exactly.
The wonderful weather today. It's so beautiful to sit and recollect, you know, Swami's life. It really is a breath, and you know, Arun, you actually nailed it when you said yesterday, his stories are definitely not a replacement for him, because the more we listen about him, the more we read about him, it you know, there is a pain, definitely, we miss him, we really miss him, and I don't think we need to be shy about declaring that. We know that Swami is everywhere, we know that Swami is omnipresent, but still, it doesn't stop us from missing him.
Really, Prem, because in several discourses also, you know, I've heard Swami saying that the name of the Lord is the only match for the form of the Lord. There's a story of the Tula Bharam, where Krishna is on one side and the other side, Tulsi leaf with the name of Lord Krishna is placed, and Krishna is balanced out, right, when all the gold in the kingdom could not match his weight. But in spite of all that, you know, the name of the Lord only makes you long more and more for the form of the Lord. And maybe that's the design, that's the plan. Because as in preparation for this week, as I kept reading more and more about Swami's Leelas and Swami's childhood and the glorious 1940s that we are going to cover now in this afternoon satsang, oh my God, there is no way to describe how much I long to see Him, just touch Him, feel Him, hear Him. Well, thanks to technology, we are able to do it at least in a virtual manner. But really, the longing for Swami that Swami's stories brings in our heart is amazing. And I feel that is a great blessing that is conferred on us by Swami's stories. That longing to have His darshan, that longing to see Him. Because as we discussed earlier, more important than the chances that we get with Swami is the longing for those which actually makes us improve and makes us grow towards our ultimate goal.
Definitely, you know, and that's a very common thing also, the couple of devotees who have come to Swami in very mysterious ways. At some point they had that longing of, you know, it's so unfair that Swami's, God is not around. You know, we've spoken to Mr. James Sinclair in the United States. He spoke of that yearning which he felt when he read the life of Jesus Christ. He said, I've been cheated by 2,000 years. He said, Jesus lived and I did not have the opportunity of being His contemporary. And that was a similar thing which I heard from a youth, you know, when Swami mysteriously appeared in his room and, you know, kind of introduced Himself to him, saying that I am here. You know, he felt that when he read the life of Shirdi Baba. He said, I've just missed Him. You know, such a wonderful personality has lived and I've not had the opportunity to live with Him. And when that yearning became so intense, Swami appeared in his room and said, don't worry, I'm here. And so he came to Swami. And so that's a very common thread which runs around, the yearning and that feeling of wanting more of Him and not having had enough of Him.
Exactly. You know, if you long for Swami, Swami has given that promise. That assurance is the most beautiful one, where He says, you know, if you need Me, you deserve Me. And that's all is the qualification that is necessary, that you need Me. And when we live through Swami's stories and read through it, that is when, you know, we long for Him so much, we really feel we need Swami. We need You, Swami. And life, anything in fact, not only life, everything seems so incomplete without You. We want You, we need You. And that kind of longing, no, it automatically communicates with Swami. You don't need to make a call, a cell phone call, or send a telegram to Swami. It's just that prayer from a pure heart. That's all. It's enough. It already reaches Him.
And you know, that's the theme which we're going to start with today, because that is one of the historic things which has happened this week.
Yes.
Telegram service, which has been so part and parcel of the Indian culture, Indian life, literally for the past 163 years, was officially shut down.
Yes, you know, it was
last Monday.
There were a lot of, you know, tears actually. The Indian Telegraph Service, which has been there from the
1850,
from when the British were ruling India, it was started. It has been part of, enmeshed into the fabric of Indian society. It has only got dissociated maybe in the last 15 years or so with the advent of the cell phones, the emails, the modern way of communications. Right. In fact, going by the facts and figures, what I read was there are about 1,000 to 2,000 employees of the Indian Telegraph Service, and they were generating a revenue of about 80 lakhs a year, while the cost was somewhere near beyond 20 crores.
Okay.
So it was a huge loss-making machinery, and therefore the government of India decided to shut down the telegraph service, because, and it was last Sunday, right, just 4 days ago, that at 9 p.m. that last ever telegram was sent, and that is going to be a historic one, just like the first ever telegram sent.
Right.
So as that glorious chapter, a wonderful chapter, an interesting chapter in Indian history comes to a close, I was reminded of several incidents mentioned in Satyam Shivam Sundaram and other books where the telegraph service got the great opportunity and privilege to be associated with the Satyasai avatar.
Right. In fact, even in Swami's childhood, we came across so many incidents where, you know, the telegram popped up. Where when Swami was in Kamalapuram, that was one of the incidents where we read the father receives a telegram about Seshamaraju's son passing away.
Yes, and in fact, the telegram was very much needed even when Swami, you know, began to act strange,
right,
after getting bitten by a scorpion, but there was no telegraph service to Puttaparthi at that time. So that was the time when Seshamaraju wrung his hands in frustration, hoping that how good it would be if the telegraph service was there.
Right.
So dear listeners, we just thought that before continuing on where we left off, last time we had left off with Swami's mandir, the Patha Mandiram.
Just coming up.
We heard how it was inaugurated on the Vaikuntha Ekadashi day, that is the December 14th, 1945, it was inaugurated on Vaikuntha Ekadashi day. From there we will resume the story, but before that we thought we'll spend a few minutes on the different interesting instances in Swami's life and history where the telegram played its little part, and this would be our way of offering our gratitude to this humble telegraph service, which has had indeed become a very much part of the social fabric in the Indian society, as I'm sure it would have in many other countries too.
And one of the earliest things about the telegram and an incident which we would like to say, you know, is that of the incident when Swami went to Venkatgiri, the Venkatgiri Palace, for the first time. You know, it's a very interesting thing. This Venkatgiri Raja comes to know about Swami, and he is in the process of inviting Swami to the Venkatgiri Palace. So, as the protocol would suggest, the Venkatgiri Raja wants to send his son, you know, to go and invite Swami, to go to Puttaparthi and officially invite Swami and travel back with him to the palace.
And interestingly, this son, I think he was a younger son,
right,
he did not like this idea of his parents going and bowing before some young Swami, recently proclaimed Swami, and he did not feel it fine that people of their, you know, of their stature bow down to some lowly village boy.
And in fact, you know, he was a typical hep youngster of those days. You know, he was a cricketer, he was the captain of one of the big teams in the south. And of course, there's a very interesting episode which he narrated when, you know, we had a conversation here with him of how once he didn't want to go to Puttaparthi, or he didn't want to travel with Swami, because an India-West Indies match was in progress. So he wanted to listen to the commentary. So he was being troubled, and he narrated how he spent that night with Swami, and Swami gave him a running commentary of the match.
Actually, on that day, what happened was, the match was being held in Madras.
Madras.
Today, what is known as Chennai. And these people, you know, they are royal people. So they have a lot of money at their
disposal.
So they would every time make it a point to travel all the way to Madras to attend and watch the test match. Now they could not because they were hosting a guest at their place. And who was the guest? Swami. And because of which the parents had made it strict that they are going to stay here, and that is why they wanted to listen to a commentary. In fact, when they put on, because of some problem and some interference, the radio would not come on. So for about 20 minutes that the radio did not come on, Swami gave a ball-to-ball detail of who was bowling, what shot had been played, what was the score. And I think that is the fastest during those days because there was no other way. There was no television. And if radio is cut off, there's no way that news can travel so fast. But Swami filled in for those 20 minutes till the radio service came back. It was amazing. And he said that exactly as Swami left off, as the radio came on, it looked as if there was a change in the commentary box and Swami was handing over the mic to the commentator.
So that was the time when Swami was replacing the radio, but the incident we're narrating is when Swami...
Yes.
Played the role of a telegram.
Yeah.
But before we come to that, so, you know, the king wanted to send his son to go and escort Swami, but as we described, he was not interested. So, an alternative arrangement was made. You know, they were thinking of sending one of the uncles of this boy to go and receive Swami. You know, that would be appropriate, they thought. That night, when the prince goes to sleep, he has a dream in which Swami comes and gives him some mangoes. So, he's very fond of mangoes. And the moment he eats those mangoes in the dream, he wakes up with an indescribable urge to go to Puttaparthi. Imagine a boy who is not interested in going and seeing Swami, who is not too keen about going and receiving Swami. He has this, you know, he's not able, irrepressible desire to go to Puttaparthi. So in the middle of the night, he goes and wakes up his father and he says, I have to go to Prashanthi Nilayam. I'm feeling this urge. His father was more than pleased. So he said, okay, you can leave tomorrow morning. So 5:30 in the morning, he starts. And when he is about to leave, father gives him some instructions. He says, when you come back with Swami, when you're traveling back, at every major town you stop, you should send a telegram saying that we are at this town and we're proceeding towards this town.
So that they have an idea of...
So where exactly Swami is and when exactly Swami would come. So these major towns like Madanapalli and all those, Chittur, and the main towns.
Between Puttaparthi and Venkatagiri.
Puttaparthi and Venkatagiri. So the son promises to do so and he starts. And I think it's the Krishna Janmashtami celebrations going on in Puttaparthi. So he goes, and the first time when he goes to Swami's presence, Swami says, you did not want to come here, but the mangoes made you come here. So I think instantly that bond was established between this young prince and Swami. So they travel back. The day after the celebrations, they drive back. And he tells Swami that, Swami, my father has instructed me to send these telegrams. Swami said, no, no, let's not waste time stopping at all these towns. Let's just proceed directly towards the palace. So, you know, the royal protocol, you know, son never disobeys the father. Or, you know, there is a lot of...
And more than that, if they don't send the telegrams, how will they
be prepared to receive Swami? And he was no ordinary guest.
Correct.
So he was a little apprehensive. Swami said, no, we'll take care of that. You come, let's go without stopping. Let's not waste any time. So they travel and they come. And when they reach the outskirts of the Venkatagiri kingdom, he finds that the whole palace is ready to receive Swami. The king is there with the Purnakumbham and the palace elephants are decorated and the army is ready. And and he's wonderstruck. You know, how is it possible that, you know, how did they know that exactly now we are arriving? So they come and the reception is all done. So then the son goes to the father and says that, how did you know that we are coming exactly at this time? So he said, from the telegrams that you sent.
Okay.
So the son is surprised. He said, we sent no telegrams. And he explains how Swami did not permit him to do that. So the father takes him to the office, the king's office, and he shows all the telegrams from the various towns, from Madanapalli and all those transit towns. He said, from these telegrams I got... And then the son says that, no, I did not send even one telegram. In fact, we didn't even stop at any of these towns. So, you know, he was surprised. So they send word for the postmaster. So the postmaster comes and he says, didn't you deliver these telegrams? And the postmaster says that we did not receive any telegrams to be dispatched to the palace.
Oh.
So then the king shows the telegrams. So the postmaster looks at them and says, you know, they are on a post, on a telegram paper, but they don't have the stamp of the post office.
Oh, okay.
So after he says that, then the king realizes that never once the telegram was actually handed to him. Hmm. Every time he got back to the office, he found a telegram waiting for him on the desk.
Okay.
It was never delivered personally by a postman. So then they realized that how Swami had dispatched a telegram exactly where the king wanted one from.
Well, this was an episode where Swami, you know, showed his capacity of how he can dispatch telegrams without even actually going to the telegraph office. But I am reminded of another interesting incident where, you know, Swami insisted on sending the telegram in the traditional manner.
Mm-hmm.
And that is another amazing episode that has been recorded even in the Satyam Shyam Sundaram, part 1. It was first narrated by Swami Sachidananda.
Okay.
On the 29th of June 1957 or 59, I'm not clear, but I think it's 59, that was the opening of the Vatavriksha.
Right.
You know, recently we celebrated its anniversary also, and there was a nice celebration there and Veda chanting and all this on the 29th of June. So during the time when that was first planted, that was the time Swami Sachidananda, with permission from Bhagwan, in Swami's presence, narrated this episode.
Mm-hmm.
He said that when Swami was in Kodaikanal in a bungalow resting, this is in the 1950s.
Okay.
So when they were resting, suddenly one day Swami just got up from his bed,
mm-hmm,
and shouted, "Don't shoot!" And having shouted like that, Swami just collapsed on the bed. And you know, at that time they were aware, we talked about it during the last satsang also, that Swami would go into a trance. Actually a transcorporeal journey. And so, immediately Swami Sachidananda had him placed on the bed and just waited. He knew that Swami had gone on a divine journey in a different plane, something. For about 1 hour Swami was in that state. Then Swami woke up, came back, and Swami wanted to send a telegram. So he gave the address and asked for the telegram to be sent to Bhopal. Bhopal is the capital city of the Indian state of Madhya Pradesh.
Right.
And he wanted it to be sent. And note the words of the telegram. The words were, "Don't worry, the revolver is with me." Swami Sachidananda and all the others did not understand anything what the telegram meant. But they just expressed to Swami their reservations about sending such a telegram. They said, because, you know, revolvers and guns come under the Indian Gun Arms and Ammunition Act. So we may be questioned, so if we can at least change that word. Swami agreed to that word being changed to instrument. And therefore a telegram was sent to that address stating, "Don't worry, the instrument is with me, Baba." And of course the sender is from Kodaikanal. That is, Swami was in Kodaikanal at that time. 4 days later, I think it was 4 to 5 days later, a letter arrives with a stamp from Bhopal.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, Swami opens the letter and gives it for everyone to read. And when they read, they come to know the whole story of this sudden telegram that Swami wanted to send. The person who is writing the letter is a person who has served in the Indian Armed Forces during the Second World War.
Okay.
That was the time when India was under, during the Second World War, India was under the British rule.
Right.
After that, India got independence. And after India got independence, yeah, there was a reorganization of states and everything was done afresh because it was shifting over from British administration to Indian administration. When that happened, a lot of politics, you know, crept in at that time itself. And though he was a very senior member, many of his juniors got promoted to better positions, better ranks, and he was purposely kept suppressed. And this was a time when he got news of how he has not been elevated, how his promotion has been denied. He was very depressed. And his wife and children had gone to their native village. So there was nobody. He was alone at home in Bhopal. And all these depressing thoughts came to him, so much so that he contemplated on committing suicide.
Okay.
He had a licensed revolver with him.
Right.
And so he went and he took his revolver and he writes in the letter that he even fired a shot to test out whether it's working.
Okay.
He got confirmed that it's working, and the next shot that he wanted to fire was into the temple, into his head, temple in his head. Just before he could do that, now this was the time actually in Kodaikanal when Swami had shouted, "Don't shoot," and had fallen. At that same instant in Bhopal, there was a loud knock on his door. He was surprised, who is this? So quickly he hid the revolver under the pillow, covered the covers, sheets on the bed, and just straightened up his, you know, his clothes, everything, so that he looks fine, and rushed to the door. He opened the door, and to his surprise, it was his childhood friend. A childhood friend who was very vocal and boisterous in the way he speaks. He entered in and started talking loudly and started, you know, cracking jokes and reliving memories. So much so...
And within, he also comes with...
Exactly. He has not come alone. He has come along with his wife and a porter, with the luggage. The porter is carrying the luggage on his head. And the porter is waiting outside as the friend and his wife go inside. And this talk is going on. So as they're reliving and he's speaking so boisterously and loudly, the army man has now a smile on his face. He's happy, he's enjoying the conversation. And after about half an hour to 45 minutes of non-stop talking, the friend suddenly asks, "Hey, where is your wife?" And he says, no, my wife has gone to her native place. Then he says, no, it'll not be nice for me to trouble you because, you know, you're all alone. When a guest comes, you'll usually go out of your way to do things. So he says, no, it's not right for me to trouble you. I'll go and stay with another friend. The army, our army hero, you know, he insists that you must stay here, but he refuses. He says, no, I have to leave. And so he makes the porter pick up the luggage again, and he and his wife wave goodbye and they leave. After all this, he is in such a happy mood that he even wonders, how did I contemplate on suicide? So he walks back, he wants to put back the revolver in place, and then he sees that the revolver is missing. Now this is a serious thing because, you know, not everyone is licensed to have a weapon, and if a weapon is missing, God knows who took it, and he's wondering who might have taken it. He's searching all around, he lifts the pillow, he removes the sheets, removes the beds. Nowhere is the revolver. As he is getting worried, there's another knock on the door. And he says, I opened the door and there was the postman who had come with a telegram which said, "Don't worry, the instrument is with me, Baba." And then he had offered his profuse gratitude at the lotus feet of Swami for saving his life and for showing him that every moment of his life he can always count upon Swami to be there. And Swami Sachidananda, who revealed this incident during the opening of the Vatavriksha, he said that this is amazing because he had read many sages and spiritual masters who did Kaya Pravesh. That is, they enter the body of another. So even if there is a lifeless body, they are able to enter. But he said that till now to date, he had never heard of Kaya Srishti, which is creation of a new body, and in this case, not just one, but three separate bodies along with all the paraphernalia, the luggage, everything had been created by Swami. And so, well, this is another simply mind-blowing, beautiful miracle of love that is also associated with the telegram.
Isn't it amazing, you know, Swami goes into a trance here at Puttaparthi, appears in the form of three people there.
In Kodaikanal, he went into the trance.
In Kodaikanal, okay. And yeah, he appears there in Bhopal. Then he wants to come back and send a telegram to say that.
You know, how many times I myself know, you know, one of our colleagues who is working in the general stores here.
Okay.
He was saying that how Swami, you know, waved his hand and materialized a Rolex watch.
Right.
And after that, Swami says, it is loose on your wrist because the strap is too big. What to do? You know, here is a person who has just in front of your eyes materialized a watch. Then what Swami does is gives him 1,000 rupees and tells him, you go to this watchmaker and get it repaired. I mean, that is, if we can call it Daiva Maya, that is the way Swami works.
And you know, talking about telegrams, there's another very interesting episode in Satyam Shamsundaram, part 2.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just going to skip a bit here. There's this person, one Mr. Ramachandran, one of Swami's devotees. He lives in Kirki, a place in Pune.
Okay.
Okay, and suddenly he gets a telegram from some unknown person saying very interesting words. It just says, "Shri Satyasai Baba arriving at your residence on 5th May to attend Upanayanam of your sons and give them Brahmopadesam."
Oh, wow.
Okay, very clear. And he doesn't know who this person who has sent it. And he's very surprised because he has not planned his son's Upanayanam. You know, it just happens that this actually happens in the year 1965. Just a couple of weeks before that 5th May, the date which was given, he's just coming home for lunch and his two sons come running to him and say, you know, you've got this telegram. So he's surprised. He's not discussed about doing his children's Upanayanam. Of course, he had that plan for a couple of years. No, he's very surprised. Suddenly a telegram is coming that Swami is coming to your house and on such a date. It's almost like, you know, you've fixed this date and it has come to Swami's notice and Swami is coming.
Yeah.
So he's surprised, then, you know, he discusses with his family and says, okay, I think I should do it on this date. It's like Swami's will. So then, you know, and it's underlined there, these words. The words of Satya, Upanayanam and Brahmopadesha.
Meaning to say that Brahmopadesha and this is Satya, it is true.
And Satya.
Satya of Satya Sai Baba.
Satya of Satya Sai Baba. You know, truly, I am going to be there and I want you to do this, whatever. And interestingly, he wanted to do this either in Shirdi or in Parni, which is, you know,
Lord Subramanya's
shrine, which is also his family deity.
Hmm.
So he either wanted to do it in Shirdi or in Parni. And then so he goes and tries to find out from where he has got this telegram.
Hmm.
And then he realizes the telegram has come from one of the post offices in Pune, the central post office in Pune. So then he finds out who gave the telegram. Then they realize that it was by a person who did not want to give his address. He said, I'm in transit, so I don't want to give my address. So when he was forced to give an address, he said, okay, take my name as Margadavelu.
Margadavelu.
Okay, Margadavelu from Malapur, All India Sai Samaj.
Whoa.
Okay.
What is the Margadavelu?
Margadavelu is just another name of Subramanya, actually.
Okay.
So Margadavelu from Sai Samaj, which I think is related to Shirdi Baba, the temple of Shirdi Baba in Malapur.
Huh.
So here, you know, he's either wanting to do it from Shirdi or from Parni, and here is a person who's coming, one Mr. Margadavelu from All India Sai Samaj in Malapur. So he takes it as absolutely Swami's will and he goes about. And you know, there's no sign of Swami coming physically and attending that Upanayanam.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he was in that, you know, a devotee was coming so regularly to Swami. He just knew Swami, he was worshipping Swami and it seems Swami's vibhuti used to come in his shrine.
Okay.
So that's how he was devoted to Swami and all that. So when they arrange for this Upanayanam, he says he has a hall in his house, you know, about 1,000 people are there.
Mm.
And everybody feels that chair which was kept for Swami, the sofa which was kept for Swami was occupied. Somehow everybody felt that, you know, Swami is there. After the ceremony was over, when they go and see, you know, they've draped that sofa with a silk cloth.
Mm.
And that silk cloth is completely crumpled, just like if somebody had sat on that sofa and got up. And, you know, in Vrindavan we have this idea of, you know, there's a jasmine, small ring of jasmine flowers which is placed on the armrest of Swami's chair. So they had placed something like that on the sofa's armrest and that was like crushed as though somebody had
placed their hands on that. Wow.
So this is another interesting Satyam Shim Sundaram related telegram incident.
Well, can go on and on about telegrams. I think I remember one more humorous incident, you know.
Okay.
Swami even played around with telegrams. This happened in 1972 when the Central Trust was actually being formed. You know, so for the document that had to be signed, all the members whom Swami had appointed had to be present and sign that. And at that time, Swami had assigned this task of getting everybody who were trustees of the trust to come and sign the document in Hyderabad.
Okay.
He had given this work to Mr. Jogarao. Mr. Jogarao was a trusted lieutenant for Swami. So Mr. Jogarao took up on the task and he sent messages to, that is the Rajmata of Navanagar, who was in Bombay at that time, to Sri Indulal Shah, who was also in Bombay, and to Mr. Nani Palkiwala, the famous judge. And yeah, he got a telephone call immediately from the Rajmata of Navanagar.
Mm-hmm.
She said that, yes, I will be coming and I will be coming along with Sri Indulal Shah.
Okay.
So we are definitely going to make it. And she also said that, you know, Mr. Nana Palkiwala is not presently in town. He's not here. So he may not be able to make it. So Jogarao got this message, but it was already quite late in the night. Quite late in the night in terms of Swami had already retired.
Mm-hmm.
It was at around 8 o'clock at night when he got this message. So he thought that the next day morning, the first thing he would do is tell Swami about this. The next day, before going to Swami, he got to know that a telegram had come for Swami from the Rajmata of Navanagar. He went and received the telegram and in the telegram it said the same thing. You know, the Rajmata telling that me and Indulal Shah are coming and Nana Palkiwala won't be able to come. So, he took the telegram went to Swami and gave Swami the telegram. Swami saw the telegram, just glanced at it, and he told Mr. Jogarao that, Jogarao, they are not coming. Jogarao thought, what is Swami talking? Because in the message said that, Swami, only Nanibal Kivala is not coming. No, they are not coming. And Swami gives the telegram. He looks at the telegram, and in the telegram, the message is clearly that they are not able to, they will not be coming. And he wonders, what on earth did I read then? Actually, along with him, there was another person too, who had read the telegram. So both of them read the telegram again, and they are both surprised because they are sure that at the post office, when they read it, it said clearly that they are coming. So then they just apologize to Swami and leave the telegram, and Swami goes for darshan. After darshan, during the lunch session, dining session, Swami calls Jogarao, laughs, and then hands over the telegram. And now when he sees in the telegram, it is that original one which says, that they are coming. You know, Swami had just, to play a prank, had in a divine manner changed the wordings on the telegram. And yes, had given a beautiful chance of this prankster Leela to Mr. Jogarao. Well, that is another telegram story for you.
Okay, so I'm going to give you another one, which is also very interesting, and you know, it has a beautiful message at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
We've spoken about a devotee by name S.N. Singh in earlier satsangs.
Oh yes, I think there's a block named after him in Vrindavan.
Right, in the hostel, one of the building adjacent to the hostel.
The new hostel building
new
now.
Hostel, right.
Now it's a new hostel building now.
Yeah, I think that is named after him. You know, he is a devotee from Calcutta. Once, I think in the year 1975, his mother, 87, 90-year-old mother, she suddenly fell ill, and you know, she had some affliction with the kidney.
Mm.
So you know that, you know, that ankles start swelling, the legs start
because
swelling.
Of the edema.
Mm. Right. So she was going through that thing, and for something like 5 to 6 weeks, she couldn't eat food.
Oh.
She was just on liquid diet, and they call this barley water and all that.
Mm.
So she was in this terrible state, and you know, she felt very bad because he didn't have a father from a young age.
Okay.
So he was very attached to his mother, and she was going through all these things. She became very thin, she couldn't eat. In 6 weeks is a very long time. So around that time, he comes to know that Swami is coming to Bombay.
Hmm.
So he wants to go to Bombay and have Swami darshan, maybe pray on her behalf. And the day he's supposed to leave, his mother slips into coma.
Oh my God. Okay,
so he's not able to leave her bedside. So he sends a telegram, again, the glorious telegram. He sends a telegram to Gokak informing that, you know, how he wished he could come, but this was the situation, he's not able to come.
So this is V.K. Gokak.
V.K. Gokak, the first vice chancellor of the university.
Hmm.
So sends it to him saying that, you know, I wanted to come, but I'm not able to. So then he goes back and attends to his mother. That day he goes to sleep, you know, he makes a prayer to Swami. He said, Swami, you know, you can take her whenever you wish it is appropriate. You can take her, but let her lead, you know, at least few months of a normal life before that.
Mm.
Let her eat what she wants. Let her have a good appetite. And then, you know, whenever you feel it's right, you take her.
But yeah, let her life be comfortable.
Yeah, let her not die in pain this way.
Mm.
And then even as he was making this prayer, he becomes very emotional. He cries and he goes to sleep. And the next morning, the nurse who's attending to his mother comes running and wakes up his wife. And he says, I don't know what happened. This lady is up. She's sitting on her bed and she's asking for khichdi.
Khichdi. Okay, khichdi, porridge.
You know, something like a made of rice, dal cooked.
Gruel it is.
Right.
Ah, yeah.
It's a solid food. You know, definitely that's not something which he has been able to eat for the past 1.5-2 months.
Mm.
And suddenly she's sitting on her bed, a lady who was in coma the previous day. And she says, get me khichdi. So, you know, the daughter-in-law runs to the room and she says, what happened? You know, you were not even able to take a morsel of food and now you're asking for khichdi. So she says, no, yesterday Swami appeared in the room here.
Hmm.
And Swami is in a very jolly mood and she says something like, you know, Swami comes in a swing. I don't know how it was possible. And Swami says that, you know, I will come and take you, but till then you eat well and be happy.
Oh.
Okay, when your time comes, I will come and take you.
Hmm.
But till then you eat well and be happy. And Swami vanishes. And the next day she wakes up with this huge appetite. And you know, she asks for khichdi. And from then she's absolutely fine. In fact, she starts eating much more than she ate even before the ailment started. She had cured completely. And the next trip when Mr. S.N. Singh comes to Puttaparthi, Swami calls him and he wants to express his gratitude for what's happened to his mother. And before he could say anything, Swami tells, I received both the telegrams.
He sent one, no?
Okay, so he says, Swami, what telegrams? And even the one which he sent was to Gokak, not to Swami, of course.
Oh, okay, yeah, correct. Okay. Oh, okay.
So he says, Swami, I sent only one telegram, and that too I sent it to Gokak. Okay. Swami said, yeah, I received that telegram also. And then patting at his on his chest, Swami said, I received this telegram also. And wow. Swami said, that day when you cried and you prayed for your mother, I received that telegram also.
Prem, listening to you narrate this, two things come to my mind. Okay. The second thing is the profound one that I am getting now in my heart. The first thing is, yes, talking in about khichdi and porridge in that happy mood, even I start feeling hungry. It's almost 1 o'clock over here. The second thing, as I said, the more profound one is, today we may think that, you know, Bhagwan has taken Mahasamadhi, he is no longer physically among us. Today we may say that the telegraph service no longer exists, it's gone. But this incident reinforces in us the strong conviction that whatever happens, the connection, the hotline that exists between our heart and the Lord is forever there. Even now, all we need to do is just close our eyes, feel love for Him in our heart and just pray. And that instant, the telegram would have been delivered to Him and He will respond. He will definitely respond because that's His promise. And I really, on behalf of all the listeners, even I'm a listener now because I was listening, I thank you for this beautiful episode because it reinforces our faith and gives us so much joy. And with that, I think, Prem, I think let's stop the telegram related stories because, dear listeners, we have another 3 or 4 more stories lined up, but well, this is just to, we thought it would be appropriate that this glorious service having ended, we will spend a few moments to see how it got its, the telegram got its chance to be associated with the Sai Avatar. And after this small break that we take now, we shall continue where we left off a fortnight ago, the opening of the Patha Mandiram in the December of 1945. We will take up Satyam Shivam Sundaram after this break.
Calling God by any name, every prayer's heard just the same. All are equal in His eyes. Who are we to criticize? Unity must be our aim. Loving God by any name. God is here within us all, and we only have to call. God is here within us all.
Back, dear listeners, after that short break, you're listening to the Afternoon Satsang, and we're talking about Satyam Shivam Sundaram, the beautiful and enlightening life of our dear Lord Swami. I mean, we spoke about the inauguration of the Pathamandiram, which I think came towards the end of 1945, as you said, December 14th, 1945. And that indeed was one of the most glorious periods of Swami's life, those Pathamandiram days. Events which happened then, it's like unbelievable. You cannot imagine that it just happened few decades before we were all born. You know, it's not like in Dwapara Yuga where we spoke of Krishna vanquishing the demons and Krishna appearing here and appearing there and he doing all kinds of things. It just happened. You know, it just baffles you.
And the rate at which, you know, Swami's glory spread. See, for example, it was, you know, just in the October, a year before that, or 2 years before that, that Swami had declared also that, you know, that Avatarhood Declaration Day on the October 20th. And here, now, so rapidly, people from all over South India were flocking. And a few people from North India too arrived. People from royal families were coming to Puttaparthi. And in fact, the Pathamandir itself was built completely by different devotees offering whatever they can as their offering to the Lord. You know, that was the influence that Swami wielded within such a short time. And, you know, it was not an easy task to come to Puttaparthi. From what we read, anybody who wants to come to Puttaparthi, the closest railway station, because rail was the fastest mode of transport. There was nothing, no talk of flights or anything that time. So, this closest railway station was Penukonda. So, people arrived to Penukonda by train. And from the Penukonda railway station, they had to go to the Penukonda bus stand via horse-drawn cart. And they faced a lot of difficulties here. One, because the horse-drawn cart was very uncomfortable. And second reason, because all these Tonga drivers, they were called Tongas, the horse-driven carts. Right. And all the Tonga drivers were very rude towards whoever was going to see that Sai Baba, that wonder boy. They felt that, you know, Sai Baba, as we discussed earlier, Swami faced the maximum criticism back at home, you know. So everybody wondered why people are coming from so far to see that person who is masquerading as some saint or sage. So they had to bear these rude comments and rude words. And after they reached Bukkapatnam bus stand, those buses, we have Volvo buses, comfortable air-conditioned buses now. Those days, they were buses that ran on steam. And therefore, the buses were very rickety. And everybody would rush to catch places in the front because the whole steam engine was located behind. And there was a big furnace to burn coal, which would be used to generate steam, which would be used to power the bus. Very inefficient, slow moving, no suspension, no shock absorbers for the tire, so you're thrown up and down, you're shaken like pebbles in a tin can. And plus the tremendous heat that the engine generates, covered in dust and soot, there's no window, there's no air conditioning in the bus. And that was a kind of bus journey that would last nearly 1.5 to 2 hours, that would bring them from Penukonda to Bukkapatnam. And then from Bukkapatnam, it was like going from the frying pan into the fire, because you will leave a rickety bus and enter a rickety and sit upon a rickety bullock cart. The bullock cart would transport you for about 3 kilometers from Bukkapatnam to Karnatanagipalli, which was the village on the other side of Chitravati, across Chitravati from Puttaparthi, you know. And they'll have to alight at Karnatanagipalli and then wade across the river Chitravati and then walk the last half a kilometer or so from Chitravati to Swami's Pathamandiram. where they would be welcomed by Swami. Now, in spite of all this, we had people even from royal families coming to Puttaparthi. This was how Puttaparthi, the journey to Puttaparthi would be if you were traveling in 1946.
Like one very interesting description, a very vivid one, is given by Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram, who has spoken about her so many times. And dear listeners, you should go to our archives and you should listen to some of her talks. It's very beautiful. She's a wonderful narrator.
She's the daughter of Dr. R.S. Padmanabhan, who had the privilege of knowing Swami for more than 5 decades to 6 decades. He, in fact, even walked behind Swami during darshans in Vrindavan. He would collect the letters. He was like Swami's commander-in-chief, his right-hand person at Vrindavan. And so, being his daughter,
and the family was associated with
Swami
Seshagiri Rao.
Yes.
Swami's first
priest.
Attendant or priest or whatever you could call it. And their family was in a very distant way related to some of the families in Puttaparthi, to the Karnam. Family, you know, she describes this whole journey. And she says that from Bangalore, it used to take more than 24 hours to reach here. You know, the Bangalore which we take 2.5-3 hours to reach today. As you said, the train used to come and land in Penukonda at 1 o'clock in the night.
Just imagine, that means to travel from Bangalore to Puttaparthi in those days, it takes more time than what it takes now to travel from Bombay to Bangalore to New York.
Exactly.
You can travel across the globe in lesser time than what it used to take those days to travel from Bangalore to Puttaparthi. Today we do it in 2 hours.
It is really a pilgrimage, you know. Now we get into buses and you just land up here. Can imagine, 1 in the night, and she used to say that there were children with them and there were old people, and as you said, that hostility which was there then. They used to land in Penukonda, they won't get food. People who knew that they are coming to see Swami would not even offer them food. That was a kind
people
of...
would puncture the tires of cars,
right,
that people were, the royal family people would be coming from.
Yeah, you had to be very careful with them, and you know, if you were lucky to chance upon any compassionate villager, you might get some milk for the children. Otherwise, you know, they had to bring everything. You know, they had to be prepared for all these eventualities, bring everything they needed for this long journey and for their stay in Puttaparthi.
Doesn't it make you wonder, Prem? Means, what kind of powerful attraction it would have been that in spite of all this they come?
Right. You know, it's some kind of invisible string which is pulling them. And, you know, that's what most of these devotees say, that when they made that journey and they came, sometimes it used to strike them that, you know, I'm not going to make this journey again. I'm not going to come again. But the way they were floored by Swami.
Exactly. You know, I remember one devotee saying that having finally reached Puttaparthi, means you're halfway across the river and you know that 10 more steps and you're in Puttaparthi and then you have to just go to the ashram. Since at that time the thoughts in the head was, oh my God, what is it? Why is it that I'm doing this? I don't know. Is it worth all this? But he says, 10 steps later, when Swami himself would be the, you know, he was the first PRO for the ashram, for whatever, if you can call it an ashram, he would be there to receive the guests. The first few words that Swami would speak, the love that would emanate from him, without even a sliver of doubt, the feeling inside would be, yes, it is worth all this trouble and much more, if I can get a chance to just be with this being. That was the kind of fulfillment they felt, and that is the reason why they kept coming again and again.
And that was the experience of all those devotees, because, you know, whatever time of the day they would land up in, be it in the middle of the night, early in the morning, Swami would be there personally to receive them. And he would always know that a troop is coming. You know, it's not like he had to be informed. There was no, as you said, there was no PRO where somebody had to tell that this troop is coming. He always was there. And even when they were leaving, you know, they all described that scene of as they cross the riverbed and they are on the other side, till they can see, you know, for about 45 minutes, Swami would be standing at the edge of the Pathamandiram and he'll be waving the handkerchief. You could see that was the, you know, Swami would leave them with that endearing vision as they would leave, because it would take a few months before they come back, so that they could remember that scene, you know, as they're leaving, Swami is standing in the...
And that would be like a lighthouse beckoning them to come back again, because every devotee who narrates says it was definitely a very difficult journey to reach Puttaparthi, but even harder would be the journey while leaving Puttaparthi, because even as you step out, even as the thought of stepping out comes, the next thought is, when am I coming back again? When am I coming back again? And this was a sentiment and emotion that not only the devotee felt. Even Swami, you know, to many devotees he would say, why do you have to leave today? Why don't you stay for 3 more days, 2 more days? And even if they finally say that we have to leave now, Swami would ask, when will you come back? Why can't you come back soon? Come back soon. Keep in touch. I will write. And there have been cases where even as the people left, Swami writes a letter to them already and sends, so that as they reach their hometown, a letter from Swami has already arrived telling them of how it was wonderful and how Swami misses them and how he is waiting for them to come back again. Wow, simply beautiful times they were.
In fact, you know, the other thing which Mrs. Geeta Mohanram describes is when they come from Bukkapatnam, you're lucky if the Chitravati is not flowing. You know, that case you can board all your luggage onto a bullock cart and you can have the bullock cart coming across the riverbed. Again, it's a riverbed, so it's all sand.
Sandy.
So you cannot travel on the bullock cart. You will have to travel by foot. Only the children and the luggage would be, you know.
That was a very specific instruction from Swami, saying that, you know, you should not harass the bullocks. He was so concerned. His, you know, the Lord is a Lord for everyone, not only humans. For the animals also, his heart would melt. And he had repeatedly requested, even commanded, that bullock cart should not be used while crossing the Chitravati, because the bullocks find it very hard to pull across the sand.
And you know, those are the things, you know, the beautiful images which they all have. And we're so lucky that they have left these images with us.
In fact, they say, you know, the day schedule, it would start off, the first person to rise. Well, before we talk about rising, let's talk about sleeping. You know, they would all sleep together. Swami would be on a bed, on a cot, in the center. And all around him, all the devotees would open their, you know, whatever they had brought, their bed and bedding and sheets. They would spread and sleep there. Swami would be the last person to sleep because he would be keeping watch over everybody. He was the watchman. He was the first watchman for Prashanti Ashram, even before the ashram came up. And along with Swami, Swami had two other people whom he would tell them to, you know, just keep guard at night. Swami, he would personally, and he would be the last to sleep. But yet, you know, some devotees recall how there were some of them who would keep awake, because there was a rumor that went around that at night, this Sai Baba, no, he goes somewhere and gets initiated and gets his powers and comes. It was as if, like, you know, how we buy milk on a daily basis. It is as if at night Swami goes and gets powers and comes, uses it up.
Swami does a top up.
Yeah, a top up of powers, uses it up in the day, and night again goes for a recharge. So there were a few of the people who would keep awake at the whole night to watch what Swami is doing. But then Swami around 11:30 in the night would go to bed. He would rise again at 3:30 or 4 in the morning.
Okay.
He would clean up the Pathamandiram, get flowers, and you know, make garlands to put for the pictures of the various deities there, and be ready for the devotees to get ready and come for bhajans. And this was what, in fact, actually inspired so many of the women devotees, especially, to, for them also to rise up early. And how can you make Swami, you know, make these garlands and do everything? So they would get up, they would clean the mandir, because they did not want Swami to do it, and they would start making flower garlands. And yes, Prem, I think this is the time for you to narrate all those wonderful flower garland incidents that you were telling
the other day. Yeah, we had this opportunity of talking to Mrs. Vijayamma, Vijay Kumari of the Anita Sharanam Nasti fame, the author of that book. You know, she was explaining, she was a little child during those days, how all her mother and aunts and all the other ladies in the ashram, they used to sit and make these huge garlands with tulsi.
Tulsi leaves.
Right.
Holy basil.
Yeah, holy basil. And that used to be in plenty in those days. So they used to collect all these things and make these garlands. And Swami would sit along with them, and Swami also would start making garlands. And undoubtedly, even amongst the women, he was the best.
Okay.
They used to make beautiful garlands. Suddenly one day, it seems, Swami said, come, let's have a contest.
Okay.
So he said, let's see who will make a garland which exactly is to my height. So, and he said, ready, steady, go, let's go. So everybody came and they started measuring Swami's height with a long thread, and they would start making.
Oh, they measure the thread on which they're going to leaves.
Yeah, the height of Swami, and they would make, and Swami also would make along with them. So how many of the times they would measure the garland, would they would either be shorter or longer than, you know, Swami.
Hmm.
So he said, no, you're failed, you're out, you're not done it well. And they found that none of them could actually, you know, make a garland which was exactly to Swami's height.
Hmm.
So then, even as Swami was talking to them, Swami said, I will make.
Okay.
Swami made a beautiful garland without measuring. You know, these people had measured Swami and they were trying to do. And Swami just made a beautiful garland and held it exactly to Swami's height. So
wow.
Said, see, perfect fit.
You know, when you said about them making garlands and none of the garlands were exactly his size, I remembered, you know, that incident that happened in Lord Krishna's times. Mother Yashoda is tired with the pranks of this little Krishna and so she wants to tie him up so that he doesn't go out and do his pranks. When she tries to tie him up, she sees that every rope that she has at home and every rope that the neighbors give also, they're either too small to tie him or they're too huge to tie a little child with. She never is able to find the rope of the exact size which she needs to tie up Lord Krishna. And here is such a similar thing happening. And naturally also, because one of the ladies who was privileged to be here during those times, she recounts and she says that it was literally like the leelas of Krishna. They all felt like they were like those blessed gopikas, and here was the Sai Krishna.
In fact, you know, this incident doesn't end here. It in fact goes to a state where it is even more comparable to, you know,
Oh my God, I'm sorry for interrupting. Yeah, then.
So you can imagine, you know, there are about six or seven ladies and Swami, and everybody's tying garlands to about 5 feet height. And you can imagine at the end of the whole session that they would have had a huge heap of tulsi garlands.
Yeah, all different sizes.
All different sizes. And they said, Swami, we've ended up making so many garlands. What do we do with them? And Swami said, oh, okay, what do we do? And Swami said, fine, I'll do something. Swami said, get all the garlands. And he started tying them together like a ball, a huge ball. And Swami tied it so tight together that it, you know, became a huge ball.
Of tulsi leaves.
Tulsi leaves. And it was really hard. Swami said, come, let's go out and play with this.
Okay.
Play catch or whatever it is. And so they go out and they start playing in the garland and they have a real frolicking time, an hour or so, and they come back. They're all tired. And they're all so happy, and then when they're coming back, they're talking to each other and they're saying, oh, how lucky we are, we had such a lovely time with Swami. And then one lady says that, you know, it's all nice, but I don't know why Swami was playing only with me. There are so many of you here and Swami was not throwing the ball to any of you.
Okay.
And the other lady said, what are you saying? Actually, Swami was not playing with anybody else but me. Swami was throwing the ball only to me.
Oh.
And then they realized that even as everyone was, you know,
well, every lady felt that Swami played only with her.
Every lady felt that Swami played only with her.
Wow.
And when they were wonderstruck with what this was happening, Swami came up and said, Pichwada, you don't understand, you mad people, that I was actually doing Rasa Krita with you. You know, that play which Krishna did on the banks of Yamuna,
Every Gopika felt that she is dancing with Lord Krishna. Yeah.
Swami said, I actually played Rasa Krita with you. That each one of you felt that I played only with you.
Wow. And amidst this playfulness, you know, there's also mention of how, you know, during those days, Swami would give the devotees a chance to give him a bath. Give him a bath in the sense, pour water and then apply a little oil. And Swami used to be very shy. He would quickly, after that is done, he would quickly, in his dhoti and towel, he would wrap himself and rush. In fact, you know, I was leafing through the pages of that book, that wonderful book, Love is My Form, which is a real great work, a PhD thesis on the first 25 years of Swami's physical life. In that there are photographs of how in 1946, Swami would visit nearby wells with the youth, with the lads, and go swimming there. So there are, you know, there are photographs of Swami swimming in the well with three other or four other boys. And, well, they had no, again, you know, seeing that, I'm just reminded of Krishna and the Gopalas. While on one hand, with the ladies, it felt as if it's like Krishna and the Gopikas. On the other hand, when you see, you cannot but help of think of Krishna and the Gopalas. And Swami swimming and beautiful, those pictures one must see to you know, feel this.
And, you know, lot of very, very small, beautiful incidents happening then. Because one thing was, all these people were coming first time to a personality like Swami. So Swami had to capture them completely, you know, because as you said, they will not make this journey otherwise. They will not take this trouble otherwise. And so each family was, you know, flowed in a different way altogether. The way Swami entered their lives. One of the incidents, beautiful incidents, which you know, Ujima narrates, is that the playfulness of Swami, how it used to come. And that was a time when the Sakama was completely in charge of Swami. You know, she was the
Dudamanya Sakama.
The coffee podi Sakama.
Yeah.
Right? So she used to be like, you know, the matron of the ashram. She used to take care of Swami. She used to prepare for Swami's bath and she used to take care of Swami's food. So she literally took care of Swami like a, you know, a young son of hers. So nobody could give Swami anything to eat. She used to be very particular. You're giving Swami food out of time and you will spoil his appetite and he will not eat food properly already. He doesn't eat well. So they all used to be very scared of Swami. I mean, of Sakama more than they were scared of Swami. So she narrates one incident when, you know, they're all sleeping in the night. Around one or sometime some unearthly hour like that, Swami comes to them and says, "Yeah, I'm feeling very hungry. You make some dosas for me."
Okay.
Okay. And the first thing these devotees say is, "Swami, if we make anything for you, Sakama is going to come and bang us tomorrow." He said, "We cannot take that chance." And Swami said, "I'm feeling hungry. You're not worried about that." And he says, "But Swami, what do we do? You will tell like this, then you know what? You'll have to take care that she doesn't wake up." Okay. And Swami said, no, I will not tell her anything. So these people said that, "Swami, you will not tell, but when we're making dosa, that sound will come, you know, when you put batter on that...
batter on the pan.
Hot pan, the sound comes. So that sound will come and she'll wake up with that." Okay. Then Swami said, "Do without that sound."
How do you make dosa without the sound?
Yeah. And they said, "Okay, Swami, we will make the dosa, you make sure the sound doesn't come."
Okay.
Okay, and they wake up in the middle of the night and make those dosas, and Swami makes sure that sound doesn't come.
Oh, when you put the dosa batter on the... Wow!
Okay. So they make those dosas and Swami has his fill and Swami goes to sleep. The next morning, breakfast time, Swami comes and sits on the table and they're serving Swami. Sakama is serving Swami. Swami is saying, "No, Sakama, I don't feel like eating. I don't have an appetite today." And she says, "What, Swami? You know, you should eat. You're all the time, you're, you know, fussing and you're not eating and all that." And no, Sakama, I don't feel like eating today. Then Sakama said, why are you not having, why you don't want to have? And Swami said, "You know, this Kupam family, you know, they woke me up in the middle of the night and they said, when Sakama is there, we're not able to give you any food, so we want to make some dosa."
Oh my God!
Okay, and she said, "You know, this is the only time we can feed you, so you wake up and have this dosas." And that's it. You know, Sakama, you know, blows up into a rage and she calls these ladies and shouts at them and, you know, "What have you come here for? You're spoiling Swami's health. Is this the time you give food to Swami?" And all that.
And Swami is having a happy laugh there.
And, you know, Swami is laughing behind her back. So this episode is over and that night they all go to sleep. And again Swami comes at 12 o'clock in the night and wakes them up and says, "You know, I'm feeling very hungry. Make something for me."
Oh my God.
You know, that was Swami's play. You know, that was, you know, Swami was doing unbelievable things. But Swami,
you know, another lady recalls, like when you were talking about the food and serving, she recalls that, you know, they would make food and some of the ladies, you know, they took it upon themselves to along to assist Subbamma and all the, others also, so that food can be made for all the devotees who are coming. But at the end of the day, you know, invariably Swami would be telling them, six devotees are coming now today evening. 10 people are going to come. In fact, after those 10 people arrive, the devotees in Puttaparthi would tell them, "You know what, from morning Swami has been speaking about you." I mean, so they would be surprised. And so food had to be made ready for them. So in this way, the kitchen was a 24-hour job. It would keep going on and, you know, later on also, even recent times when we speak to other people who have had the chance of being with Swami, cooking for Swami, including like Ratan Lal auntie,
right.
All of them, you know, they say that is one thing that went on 24 hours. Kitchen is 24 hours with Swami. So that has continued even to this day. So it used to be running for 24 hours. And anytime there's a food shortage, they would just call Swami, who would just tap on the vessels and food would be sufficient for all. But at the end of the day, if food is left back, you know, some of these ladies, what they would do is, they would call all the children and the youth people. "Hey, come here." So there'll be about 15-20 of them. Call everybody and take all the food, the 2-3 curries, 2-3 sambars or thing, whatever is remaining, mix it up with rice, make one big heap, and make morsels and give everybody one morsel each so that food is finished and not wasted. So in the night, you know, those days there was nothing like, not electricity had not reached so much. It was just in its nascent form. So night when everything is dark, so many times you just narrated how strict Sakamma was and about Swami's eating and how it should be only particular things he should eat. But this Swami, you know, he would run, and when all the youth are receiving their morsel of food at night, so many times it has happened that Swami also stretches out his hand. And after that, when the ladies discover that, they are shocked because, you know, Swami is here eating juta. I mean, this is not a fresh food. It is a old food, stale food. It's mixed up and it is being served into the hand directly, not even on a plate. And Swami would eat it and they would get fearful that, oh my God, Swami, fine that you ate it. Don't tell anybody at least, please. That was one. Another thing is, when the ladies are cooking, Swami would go walking and from behind, you know, he would close the eyes. He would cover their eyes with his palms. They would think it's some boy, and they scold, and then they turn back and they see the Swami there, and then they, oh, oh my Swami, and Swami enjoys a laugh. So it's literally Sai Krishna.
Like, you know, another incident which Mrs. Karunama Ramamurthy, you know, the author of Anandadai, Shri Satyasai Anandadai, she was narrating, you know, her two sons were of Swami's age, and they used to be, like, you know, in Swami's room, they used to be staying there. And Swami would wake up in the middle of the night again and, you know, and say, you see, this devotee, he has got some bananas for me. It is there. You get it, we'll have that banana.
Okay.
Because they would sit late in the night chatting, and Swami used to keep making pranks and making fun. So they would sit in the whole night and they used to eat. And the boys would say, Swami, if we go out with these banana peels, Sakamma will catch us.
Oh, Sakamma was some feared lady.
Okay, so then Swami said, you know, but let's have the bananas. You know, why fear about the peels? So they said, what do we do about the peels then? Then Swami said, just put it under my bed.
Huh.
Okay, I'll get it clean in the morning so nobody will know. Okay, so they used to eat the whole night, put the banana peels under the bed. In the morning, Swami would wake up before these boys, go and call the boy's mother and bring them inside and say, see these fellows, in the name of taking care of me, they come and sleep in my room and they eat banana the whole night and they put it under my bed.
Oh my God. What? I mean, see, the beauty about God, I feel, is that, you know, whatever He does is madhuram. That song goes, adharam madhuram, nayanam madhuram, vadanam madhuram, hasitam madhuram. Everything about the Lord is sweetness. Even the pranks, you know, if anybody else had done this, we would just get up and I am sure beat them out of shape. But I am sure that looking at Swami or just being near Him, you will not mind Him doing this. In fact, you will enjoy it. I remember in, you know, when Swami made these kind of pranks, it continued even in the 1990s. If Swami plays such a prank, what we do is, we go back and note it down in our diary and cherish it throughout our lives. If you and me do it, it becomes a prank. If the Lord does it, it is sweetness. And that is the magic of the Lord. Everything about Him is sweet. Well, going back to those days, in those days, as we said, there was nothing available in Puttaparthi. So, once or twice a week, they would go to the market at Bukkapatnam, the Santa that they would call. It would be held there, the fair, in the market, I mean, and purchase vegetables from there and come. Today we see that Santa has now shifted to Puttaparthi, and I think every Saturday we have the Santa, and everybody in Puttaparthi, including the permanent resident foreigners, everybody goes to that Santa to buy fresh vegetables, fresh produce. It tastes totally different cooking with those vegetables. But well, that Santa used to be originally held in Bukkapatnam, and people would go to Bukkapatnam and buy those vegetables and come. And yeah, in the schedule, as we spoke about the bath and other things, they also, you know, different ladies, different people who had some amount of musical talent, they composed their own kind of songs in Telugu, which they would sing out to Swami, you know, pleading with Him to wake up in the morning. It is not exactly a suprabhatam, but carrying the spirit of a suprabhatam, singing and waking Him up, because that's how they do to the Lord. Then they had a song in which they would ask Him to spend time with them, a song in which they would ask Him to have food. So, you know, when we think of our student days, we used to have all this. You know, anything we want the Lord to do, we would try to make a song about it and sing it out to Him. This is not something that the student started. This has been happening from the 1940s.
Right. Talking about songs, talking about this old mandir, another aspect of that old mandir days, which is, you know, soaked in nectar and beauty, is that of the Chitravati sessions. And you know, you spoke about the songs. I think before we talk a little about those Chitradi sessions, we'll play this beautiful song. It's so nostalgic and, you know, it takes you back to those Chitravati days. It mentions about Swami as the one who resides on the banks of Chitravati.
Just a pointer before the song. The reason why Swami used to go to the banks of the Chitravati is that there was no common place, gathering place in Prashanti where Swami and all the devotees could sit at the same time. And therefore, he used to take them to the expansive banks of the river Chitravati where hundreds of people could be accommodated and everybody would get the chance of seeing, hearing and being with Swami.
You know, having said that, you feel that how sad that we had the Kulanthal. Maybe in the end, if the Kulanthal was not there, we as students would have been on the sands of Chitravati with Swami.
Well, Prem, you know, again, you're tempting me to go into one more little story. I must narrate it here. It so happened that, you know, every time there was this Vaikuntha Ekadashi day, when Swami would take them to the Chitravati banks, and on that day he would materialize a vessel in which mysteriously Amrit,
right,
the nectar would appear, and Swami himself would personally distribute to everyone. So Kasturi writes about this. He says that they would always look forward to this day because on this day they'll get Amrit and on Chitravati.
The beautiful thing was Swami used to bring that vessel filled with that Amrit from under the sand.
Exactly. And it had no lid. It was
right.
A open vessel.
Right.
An open vessel which had enough Amrit to satisfy how many of our people are there. And so one Vaikuntha Ekadashi, just a day, a few days before, Swami had for some reason been upset with some upset. And so he seemed to be in a bad mood, in quotes. And therefore, Kasturi, he went to Swami and said, Swami, shall we go to the Chitravati sand, Swami? Means he thought that will lighten Swami's mood also and at same time that Amrit. This was the time when the Prashanti Nilayam Mandir was being built, so there was a lot of sand near the Mandir itself. A lot of sand and other things. So Swami said, why? Why should we go to Chitravati Sands? Swami asked sternly. Then Kasturi says, Swami, no need Chitravati Sands, Swami, let's sit on the sands here only. Okay. Then Swami looks at him and says, Kasturi, do you think I really need the sands to make it? And then Swami tells him that do not clamor behind these things. Always long for the Lord. The Lord can create anything out of anywhere. Your intention is not about spending time with Swami. It's after those miracles that you're looking for. And you think that Swami needs some kind of settings, the sands and that thing to do it. So that was one of the last years when Swami went
Swami, in fact, tells very profoundly. Mm-hmm. Swami says, you are my greatest miracle.
Exactly. I'm sorry, I forgot the punchline of that episode. That was what Swami tells Kasturi, that you are my greatest miracle, Kasturi. And yes, that was the end of the Chitravati days. But before we go to that, as I said, we are now in the beginning of the Chitravati days. The song.
Listen to this wonderful, beautiful song.
Chitravati tira chitrupa bhava Chitravati tira chitrupa bhava Chintanella nudi chi chantamu che Shabbat.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You know, on behalf of Prem and myself, I would like to tender a little apology. It so often happens that when you are talking about Swami and His Mahimas and His Leelas and Glories, you get so lost that you are not able to keep track of time itself. Just before playing this beautiful song which speaks about Swami on the Chitravati, we promise that we will be discussing and enjoying, reliving those beautiful stories and incidents and experiences that happened on the sands of the river Chitravati. But the digital clock in front of me in the studio says 1:50, which means we have just got 10 minutes left of the afternoon satsang. So during this song, Prem and myself decided that we will dedicate the next week's Satyam Shivam Sundaram satsang to all the different leelas and mahimas that Swami did on the sands of river Chitravati.
Yeah, right, Prem? That's plenty and plenty, and maybe a bit of that we will be able to cover in the next week.
Exactly, yeah. Not that we will be able to cover it fully, but this 10 minutes now is
definitely not going to do justice to that beautiful episode of Swami's life.
So taking along another track, you know, there's one more thing that happened in the 1946 was devotees started coming and offering, as you know, the mandir itself, the Pata Mandir itself was an offering by the devotees. So they wanted to give to their Lord. We see people going to Tirupati and offering 20 kg gold, 30 kg gold to the Lord Venkateshwara. Like that, you know, people wanted to come and offer to Swami. And so some devotees offered their car. They said, Swami, whenever you want to use, you please use the car. But the cars could come only up to Karnataka Nagipalli, across the river Chitravati. So 3-4 cars would be parked there. Though Swami never asked for it, they would be there because the devotees would say, Swami, whenever you want to use it, you use it. We are here for 20 days, so our car is your car. So that is how, you know, this thing started, where Swami started getting cars. The ownership remained with the devotees, but Swami could use them. At the same time, you know, seeing Swami's love for all creation, that is humans, animals, so many devotees came and gifted him with dogs. And the dogs apparently had a lovely relationship with Swami, you know. There are so many pictures of Swami petting different dogs. So if we go into that, you know, I remember we even discussed about how Swami helped Mr. Chidambaram Krishnan control his anger,
right,
by asking him to purchase dogs. So, and Swami in his discourse also many times he says, this way, DOG dog, GOD God. So somehow the dog has enjoyed, you know, Swami's proximity. But among the different dogs, two dogs stand out, and that is Jack and Jill, because, well, you know it, right? Prem,
right.
Swami has talked about Jack and Jill.
He has spoken about how his benchmates in school, Ramesh and Suresh, they were actually reborn as these two dogs, which were so dear to Swami, Jack and Jill.
Refreshing the memory of, you know, our listeners, when we spoke about Satyam Shyam Sundaram, I think about 2 months back, of the Bukkapatnam days, that is when we spoke about the ESLC exam,
right.
When Swami wrote the exam for Ramesh and Suresh, and both of them loved Swami so much. One of them, you know, when Swami left the school, both of them met with untimely deaths because they were unable to bear their separation. One became mad, and Swami says the other one fell into a well, you know, thinking of Swami, Satyam, Satyam, Satyam. So, and Swami says that because of that kind of love for Swami, both of them were reborn as dogs, Jack and Jill, who got the chance to stay with Swami, and their lives is also beautiful. Maybe we can conclude this afternoon satsang with the brief story of their lives.
Right, and we should listen to the story from Swami's own voice. You know, many, many times you've heard Swami speaking so fondly of these two pets that he's had. So, I think it's a privilege today to hear it from Swami's own voice, where Swami is talking about Jack and Jill.
Oka chinna katha cheppi nenu mugistanu.
Bhagavan will tell us a small story now.
Puramu nenu paata mandiramlo undetundi vaanni.
In olden days, Bhagavan was there in the old mandir.
Akkada
there,
Mr. and Mrs. Croup anetundi vaaru undetundi vaaru. British.
They had British couple by name Mr. and Mrs. Croup were there.
Oka pillanu teesukochi naaku icharu.
They brought 2 puppies and gave Swami, to Swami.
Ma intlo puttinatundi pillallu Swami sannidhilo untundali. Mem lekapoyina gaani avu unte mem undinattiga bhavistam annaru.
The British couple said, Swami, we leave behind these puppies. Let them be near you. Enjoy the proximity.
Danni pettukunnam.
Bhagavan had
daniki a group e peru pettadu Jack and Jill ani pettadu.
And the British couple named the puppies as Jack and Jill.
అవి రెండు కూడా ఏ విధంగా ఉండేటువంటివి?
హౌ ఆర్ దే?
నేను పండుకుంటే తల దగ్గర ఒకటి, కాళ్ళ దగ్గర ఒకటి నిద్రించేటువంటివి.
వెన్ భగవాన్ రెస్ట్, వన్ డాగ్ విల్ బి నియర్ ద హెడ్, అనదర్ టువర్డ్స్ ద ఫీట్.
ఒకానొక సమయం లోపల,
ఎట్ వన్ టైమ్,
మైసూర్ డివిజన్ రాణి వచ్చింది.
మైసూర్, ద క్వీన్ ఆఫ్ మైసూర్ కేమ్ హియర్.
ఆమె చాలా మడి మనిషి.
She has got certain
చాలా చాదస్తం. కుక్కలు అర్చినా కూడా తాను భోంచేయదు.
She is highly orthodox, even if she here's a dog barking, he should not bark.
వచ్చి ఈ కుక్కలేమైనా ఉంటుంటే లోపల పెట్టి బీగ వేయండి అన్నారు.
She already sent a message, if there are any dogs around, they must be put under lock and key.
పుట్టపత్తికి రోడ్ ఉండేటువంటిది కాదు.
There was no approach road to పుట్టపత్తి.
కర్ణాటపల్లి అనేటువంటి దగ్గర కారు నిలిపించి అక్కడ నుంచి నడుచుకుని వచ్చేటువంటి వారు.
There is a village by name కర్ణాటపల్లి. They have to get down there in the car and walk the distance.
ఆ మహారాణి కారు కర్ణాటపల్లి దగ్గర నిలిపెట్టారు. ఆమె నడుచుకుని వచ్చింది.
They stopped the car there near కర్ణాటకపల్లి. She came walking.
ఎక్కడే గాని చిన్న హోటల్ గాని ఇంకే విధమైనటువంటి గాని అనుకూలంతో ఉండేటువంటిది కాదు.
There were no hotels or anything like that.
సాయంకాలం డ్రైవర్ వచ్చాడు, ఇక్కడ భోంచేసుకుని తిరిగి పోవాలి.
ఇన్ ది ఈవినింగ్ డ్రైవర్ కేమ్, హి హస్ టు టేక్ హిస్ ఫుడ్ అండ్ రిటర్న్.
రాణి గారు చెప్పారు, నేను ఒక రాత్రి స్వామి యొక్క మందిరంలో నిద్ర చేయాలి, నేను ఈనాడు రాను అని.
ద క్వీన్ సెడ్, ఐ వాంట్ టు టేక్ రెస్ట్ టు నైట్ హియర్, ఐఎమ్ నాట్ ప్రిపేర్ టు కమ్ నౌ.
భోంచేశాడు, చీకటి పడిన తర్వాత ఆ డ్రైవర్ వెళుతున్నాడు.
డ్రైవర్ హ్యాడ్ హిస్ ఫుడ్ అండ్ వాజ్ రిటర్నింగ్ దట్ నైట్.
అతనికి దోవ తెలియదు చీకట్లో.
అండ్ బికాస్ ఇట్ వాస్ పిచ్ డార్క్, హి డిడ్ నో ద రూట్.
నా దగ్గర ఉన్న కుక్కకు, జాక్, నీవు డ్రైవర్ తో పోయి తెల్లవారు నువ్వు వచ్చేసేయ అన్నాను.
భగవాన్ సెడ్ టు ద డాగ్ బై నేమ్ జాక్, జాక్, టేక్ ది లీడ్, షో హిమ్ ద రూట్ టు దిస్ డ్రైవర్.
ఆ జాక్ ముందు నడుస్తూ ఉండాలి, డ్రైవర్ వెనుక నడుచుకుంటూ వెళ్లాడు, కర్ణాటకపల్లి చేరారు.
దిస్ డాగ్ జాక్ వాస్ వాకింగ్ ఫస్ట్ అండ్ డ్రైవర్ వాస్ ఫాలోయింగ్ ద డాగ్.
అక్కడికి వెళ్లిన తర్వాత డ్రైవర్ కారులో పరున్నాడు.
హావింగ్ రీచ్డ్ ద స్పాట్ ద డ్రైవర్ రెస్టెడ్ ఇన్ ద కార్.
చల్లని కాలం కనుకనే కారు కింద, టైర్ కింద ఈ కుక్క పండుకుంది.
And it was very cool, very fine outside. The dog was lying beneath the car, under the car.
Tellavaru lechadu driver.
Driver got up next morning.
Kani chali kalamu mundugane start cheyali rani garu vache lopal nenu.
It was winter, the car should be started beforehand.
Start chesadu.
He started the car.
Koncham trippal anipudu munduku jarigadi.
And he wanted to drive to a little distance.
Aa jaaku nadum paina tyre poyindi.
The tire passed over the back of this dog.
Backbone anta virigipoyindi.
The backbone fractured.
Spinal column anta poyindi.
The spinal column fractured.
Enta daniki vishwasame meeru chakkaga vidyarthulu gaani, vidyavantulu gaani, bhaktulu gaani, buktulu gaani, yuktulu gaani, muktulu gaani, rattulu gaani, evaraina deenni chakkaga gurtinchavalsinatundi vishayam.
Understand the principle of the faith of the dog Jack, the educator or uneducated, rich or poor or devotees, any class for that matter.
ఆ బాధను భరించుకోలేక అరుచుకుంటూ వస్తుండాలి.
The dog could not bear the suffering, it started barking.
మధ్యలో చిత్రావతి రివర్.
There is Chitravati River on the
way.
It was dragging its body along the sands of the shores of Chitravati.
మాకు గేట్ దగ్గర ఒక సాకలి సుబ్బన్న అనేటువంటి వాడు ఉండేవాడు.
అట్ ద గేట్ దేర్ ఇస్ అ పర్సన్ బై నేమ్ సాకలి సుబ్బన్న.
లోపలికి వచ్చి, స్వామి మన జాకు నడుము ఇరిగిపోయింది, ఏడ్చుకుంటూ వస్తుందాది అన్నాడు.
దట్ సాకలి సుబ్బన్న రిపోర్టెడ్ టు భగవాన్, స్వామి దట్ జాక్ డాగ్ కేమ్ హియర్ క్రైయింగ్ ఆల్ ద వే.
నేను లోపల నుంచి బయటకు వచ్చాను.
భగవాన్ కేమ్ అవుట్ దెన్.
జాక్ 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 అని వింటాను.
భగవాన్ వెన్ సేయింగ్ జాక్ జాక్.
అది అరుచుకుంటూ వచ్చింది.
ఇట్ కేమ్ వెరీ ఫాస్ట్.
పాదాలపైన పడింది.
Fell on the feet and died at the feet of Bhagavan.
Chuchara enta vishwasam.
See the depth of faith.
Akkati nunchi kuda nu na paadala paina padi pranam icchalanipindi anta vishwasamto vachindi.
The dog had such a faith as to die at the feet of Bhagavan.
Adi maraninchiki puramu nannu chustu undi.
Prior to death it was watching Bhagavan.
Nenu inta paalu teppinchi notlo vesanu.
Bhagavan brought milk and made it to drink.
Rendu chetulu teesukundi da rendu నా చేతుల పైన పెట్టింది, ప్రాణం ఇచ్చింది.
ఇట్ కాట్ హోల్డ్ అప్ బోత్ ది హ్యాండ్స్ ఆఫ్ భగవాన్ అండ్ డైడ్.
ఎంత విశ్వాసం చూడండి.
సీ ది డెప్త్ ఆఫ్ ఫెయిత్.
ఆ జాకు మరణించిందని ఆనాటి నుంచి జిల్లు ఆహారం మానివేసింది.
బికాస్ ద జాక్ డైడ్ ది అదర్ డాగ్ జిల్ డిడ్ంట్ ఈట్.
కొన్ని దినములకు ఆ జిల్లు కూడా మరణించింది.
ఆఫ్టర్ ఫ్యూ డేస్ దట్ జిల్
ఈనాడు పాత మందిరం లోపల వెనుక భాగంలో కట్టినటువంటి బృందావనము ఆ రెండింటి అనేక సమాధి.
అండ్ టుడే యు ఫైండ్ బిహైండ్ దిస్ ఓల్డ్ మందిర్ యు ఫైండ్ ద టోమ్స్ ఇన్ మెమరీ ఆఫ్ జాక్ అండ్ జిల్.
ఎస్ ప్రేమ్, ఐ మీన్ జస్ట్ నో వర్డ్స్ టు స్పీక్. వాట్ అ బ్యూటిఫుల్ లైఫ్, వాట్ అ బ్యూటిఫుల్ డెత్. Life at the feet of the Lord, death at the feet of the Lord. Indeed, fructified are the lives of Jack and Jill. And even to this day, there are two Tulsi plants that denote the Samadhi where Jack and Jill lay
behind
buried.
Old mandir, as
behind the old Pata Mandiram, as Swami said. So, dear listeners, the time is nearly 2 o'clock in our studios and we hope you enjoyed this satsang as much as Prem and myself did, because it has been so filling and so fulfilling. And Swami's own narrative in the end just is the crowning glory of this whole satsang. Do write to us at listener@radiosai.org with what you felt, what you feel. And as both Prem and me have discovered, please let us spend time in reading the life of our own Swami. Because you know, Swami says his life is his message, and just reading about the story, it's such a pleasure to read these stories, and just reading the stories gives us such wisdom, such knowledge, such information and such transformation that even any amount of, you know, spiritual knowledge will not impart.
And in this week, which is going to lead on to the Guru Purnima, it is definitely the right thing to do, because this was the message Swami came to not just give but live every moment of his earthly sojourn. So it was indeed a pleasure for us to recollect those wonderful incidents which happened, and we're hoping that this will go on for as long as, you know, it ever takes.
Exactly. And as promised, next week we shall be delving into those wonderful leelas and mahimas on the banks of River Chitravati.
So dear listeners, before that we're going to leave you with a little song on Swami, our dear guru. On the other side of this song you will be joined by Chandu. And just to remind you, the Guru Purnima celebrations officially begin from today, because this evening we're going to have a program in the Sai Kulwant Hall by devotees and Balvikas children from the state of Goa.
And before you play that song, Prem, dear listeners, there is a wonderful DVD product, a Sai Blossom product brought from Radio Sai, which is available, called The Advent. For those of you who have not watched it, highly, highly, highly recommended. It beautifully covers, of course, nothing can ever cover all the leelas and stories of the Lord, but it beautifully covers Swami's early days, and then some of the footage that is there in that video DVD, which lasts, I think, about 1 hour 40 minutes. It is 100 minutes of sheer bliss and pleasure, where you can watch some of the videos that you have never seen before. The Advent, those who don't have it, definitely make it a point to own your own copy. With that, and offering our gratitude at the lotus feet of our dear Sai, we bring this afternoon satsang to a close.